Welcome to ASME TechCast, bringing you the innovators, the innovations, and the issues that push the envelope of engineering. I'm Sarah Albaraca, Strategic Content Editor at Mechanical Engineering Magazine. And joining me today is Amy Elliott, Group Leader of Robotics and Intelligent Systems at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. Amy holds a PhD from Virginia Tech, and she's currently a research scientist on multiple projects involving 3D printing and robotics. She's been featured on Discovery Channel's TV shows, The Big Brain Theory, and Outrageous Acts of Science, and she's even launched her own YouTube channel. Today we'll hear from Amy about how it all came to be and how she balances it all, from work life to public outreach to being a mother. Amy, thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks. I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you today.
Amy, you majored in mechanical engineering and you've got your PhD. You were a project lead for the first ever 3D vending machine. You have multiple patents. You've even competed on Discovery Channel. So tell us, how did this whole engineering journey begin for you?
Yeah, so it's one of those random stories. I like really did not know what engineering was. I think I had a, you know, a distant relative that was an engineer, but just really had no idea. So it wasn't even on my radar. Like I tell people, when I was getting into high school, the only skill that I knew that I had that could translate to a job was playing the flute. Okay. Like wasn't paying attention on like, you know, what careers even could look like, you know, in options for me. So, but luckily my older brother, he had gotten into shop classes and really enjoyed that. And so he joined a robotics team. So FIRST Robotics, a lot of people actually in engineering came up through FIRST Robotics. It's a really fun high school robotics competition. And so my brother joined the team and he got to go to Florida for the competition, like Disney. Okay. Like they held it at Epcot back in the day. And I was like, well, I want to go to Florida. So I joined the team and had some really great mentors and actually realized like kind of what, oh, like I really enjoy this mechanical design things. Like I couldn't stop thinking about how to design the different parts of the robot and just kind of unlock this part of my brain. And so I had some really great mentors nurture that in me and help me identify like, hey, this is mechanical engineering. This is a really great career path. You know, you can make some, you know, real good money with that. I'm like, sold, right? Like, so I've just kind of stuck with it since then and just been very lucky to have so many awesome opportunities as a mechanical engineer. So.
Thanks for sharing the origin story. It's always great to hear about the beginnings. So when you're thinking back to those days, is there anything that was crucial or anything that shaped your future career path as an engineer that would be important for people who are just starting out? Is there something they should be thinking about at this point?
Yeah. So my biggest advice I always give to new engineers is be hands-on. Okay. Like it is not enough to sit in the classroom and just try to get everything you need from there, because our curriculum, we just have to face it. Our curriculum cannot evolve as fast as technology and tools are evolving. So you need to, you know, be learning on your own. And then also doing, like, I had a great time in the collegiate competitions, right? So like I did, SAE Baja, NASA Moon Buggy, you know, a lot of other ones. And I got to learn skills like CAD and welding and machining and all these other things that, you know, you don't get to learn in engineering curriculum, but like super help when you're trying to design something. It's like, okay, don't design this to have to weld it here, because this is going to be a pain in the neck. Like you need that, you know. So just be hands on and then, you know, push for hands on. Like when you get a job, a lot of engineering jobs are now structured to be very specialized, and that's great. We need specialization, but you know, they're also structured by people just looking at spreadsheets, right? Like, okay, it's more efficient if we keep this over here and keep that over here. So push, you know, when you get your job, push to see the hardware, push to lay your eyes on actual problems, and be involved in the physical, whatever's happening, and don't just stay behind your desk where it is cheaper for you to be probably, but in the long run, you can actually make, you know, much better improvements and be way better at your job if you actually have that hands-on experience.
So considering everything that you've done, considering all the various achievements over the years, is there any one that stands out to you? Is there any one point where it was like, this is the accomplishment, nothing will top this?
Yeah. So besides being a mom, which is a huge, huge thing, you know, that's a big deal to be a parent, especially I think for females in demanding careers like STEM. But really just like, honestly, it just goes back to like getting a PhD. It was kind of like getting into engineering. I didn't really know what that was. And I went to grad school because my buddies were going and I didn't really want to get a job. I was being lazy. And then like, learned about like, oh, like research, PhD, and had a great mentor, a great advisor that got me through it. And so I still to this day, like, I'm just like, man, how did that even happen? Like, that was just a really great lucky set of circumstances. And it's just set me on this path of on my life. That's, you know, this path that it's been so much more than I could have ever hoped for. So like, I'm working for a national lab on really interesting problems. I'm a nationally recognized science communicator in some circles, right? Like, I've got like this YouTube series going, to help people on that similar path. And so, yeah, it all started with that PhD.
Let's talk about that transition from, you know, the PhD life into working in a national lab. So you're at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. What is that like? What are some of the challenges that come with that transition?
I think, you know, you don't realize this, but when you get into your profession, you get the PhD and you land the job, it's like, oh, that is just the beginning. Like there are all kinds of things that you need to worry about. Like, so one of the challenges at being in a national lab is like, there's just so much going on and it's really difficult, at least for me, to find your place and to get on the radar of the right people and get the things that you want to be pushed. So after a while, after starting, I realized like my research wasn't really on the program radar. So, I mean, there's just so many big things happening in 3D printing. That's my research areas. I research inkjet-based additive manufacturing, what we call it. It's, you know, easier to say 3D printing. But luckily, I do work in a very diverse place. And there's so many different types of problems to solve. I was lucky that a lot of scientists from other programs, you know, at least knew about me, reached out to me, felt comfortable to do that, and, you know, invited me to collaborate with them, you know, using my technology in their problem space. And really, the way that DOE is set up, it encourages industry collaborations as well. So I had some really great industry partners. So I really, you know, I just never said no to a new opportunity and did my best to fight hard to get the results we needed. And, you know, no matter how much paperwork it took, like, let's do this new experiment with this new, you know, procedure, you know, get building the right teams, make sure, you know, we have the right resources. And it's just been amazing seeing the results of that, just like not saying no and not giving up. I've got, you know, 15 patents now, and I've only, you know, been working professionally for like 10 years and two R&D 100 awards, which is kind of our Grammys of science, I guess, like got dozens of publications. And so it's been so worth the struggle and the stress. And so now I can see kind of the fruits of that labor. And I can also kind of see now when to say no, right? Like now I can kind of better judge and understand what opportunities are going to be worth my time or which ones are, you know, on the riskier side, and then focus on the things I want to do.
So you touched on 3D printing as your specialty in your current work. 3D printing is something that we've seen advancing so fast and being used in so many ways. What do you see as the future of 3D printing? Where is the work that you're doing going to fit into that future?
Yeah, so we are just in the beginning of this technology, honestly. Like there's so much opportunity in like just materials development. Like there's other opportunities in equipment design and precision and reliability, blah, blah, blah. Like just materials development. We're still using alloys and polymers and materials that were made for completely different processing, right? Like, so we're using like injection molding plastics on this, you know, 3D printing process, or we're using like a casting alloy on this like laser powder bed fusion process. And so, you know, we've struggled to get adoption because there are some issues with using these materials in this kind of layer wise fashion, right? With 3D printing, we're printing things layer by layer, like specifically for plastics, there's issues with bonding between the layers. So your part's not as strong in the build direction as it is in the other directions. And so, like, you know, we're just at the beginning of actually understanding the processes and understanding the materials to the point where we can actually solve that type of problem, right? And so I think we're going to see, you know, in the next maybe even 5 years, we're going to see some huge advances in part performance just because of the materials development that has been going on. And I would love to work on multiple materials. So how do we use the flexibility of 3D printing to put all kinds of different materials in different places throughout a part to make it function like you could have never imagined before, right? So I think that's going to happen and be super exciting and like a whole new field of its own. We can call it like mosaic materials or something. So that's what I'm excited about.
That is exciting. On the topic of 3D printing, Amy, I believe I saw that you have a 3D printed life-size statue of yourself. Can you tell us that story?
So I've been super lucky. The American Association for Advancement of Science chose like 125 women to be ambassadors for STEM. The slogan is, if she can see it, then she can be it. And it's also sponsored by Lyda Hill Philanthropies. And so they brought us to a conference and they gave us social media coaching. But the coolest part was they 3D scanned us and then 3D printed us into life-size statues. All right. So like I can think of no cooler award out there, right? Like my head cannot get any bigger after that. Nothing will top it. But to make it even better, like for Women's History Month, I guess this was a couple years ago now, they put the statues in the Smithsonian on the mall in DC for the world to see. And it was just the most out of this world experience. And the coolest part about my statue was like, I was pregnant. So I got this huge baby bump. And so like, I'm kind of like front and center, I think, of the display. At least it was in the Smithsonian because it's like, hey, pregnant woman, right? It's kind of like the epitome of what we're trying to do. We're trying to show that, you know, women can be moms and still be great scientists and engineers and everything else. But what was cool about the Smithsonian was like, I'd had the baby by then. So I got to take a picture by my pregnant statue with the baby on my hip, like a before and after. And it was just, you know, chef's kiss. Amazing.
That is quite the story. Outside of 3D printing, you're also very involved in robotics. So what can you tell us about your work at the Department of Energy?
I have an alter ego in robotics. So my group does a lot of automation work as part of our advanced manufacturing research. So we have this project working to automate electric vehicle battery disassembly. So sidebar, like I love working at Department of Energy because all the problems we have here, I feel are real problems that would have huge impact, like eventually to our planet. You know, I don't want to knock NASA, like space is cool, but I just wish more people nerded out about like the impact of energy research, right? Like they did space research because we have energy problems now, right? Everything you do uses energy. We need to make it more efficiently. We need to use it more efficiently. We need to explore all the things related to energy so that we can, you know, continue to survive, right? So maybe eventually we'll invent warp drive and find another Earth someday and we'll have plenty of resources to make whatever energy we need. But until then, we got to figure this out, right? So anyway, I digress. But this project is actually, you know, we're going to need to be able to mine EV battery packs for, you know, all of these EVs that all these electric vehicles that we're going to have, because we really just don't have, you know, enough resources for that as it stands. And the way we do it now, the way we recycle electric vehicle battery packs is pretty wasteful. Like they break it down to the like bulk module level, like these big boxes, and they just throw those whole boxes in the shredder. Okay. The better thing to do is to actually break those boxes down and pull out the individual battery cells. But that's like super tedious and actually really dangerous because there's a lot of, you know, chemical energy stored in these battery packs. Like if you puncture one, like it can actually just catch fire, and that's very dangerous. So anyway, it's too dangerous and too tedious for humans. So we're actually teaching the robot how to do this itself. And yeah, that's just a really exciting project to be a part of.
Amy, it's just incredible to hear how much you have going on, you know, all these projects, all of this work. And at the same time, you're very involved in public outreach. So could you talk to us a little bit about why both research and outreach are so important to you and how you manage to balance all of that?
I think engineers are so needed in research, especially the applied research spaces. Someone needs to bring things down to earth, right? Be able to talk to the actual equipment manufacturers, the actual, you know, industry people who are trying to make stuff, trying to make a product. There are so many applied problems out there that need that practical solution-driven focus. We need all of the types of research, but so much of it is very fundamental and just studying, right? We just want to study this problem. We want to understand the phenomena. It's like you talk to an industry person and they're like, I don't really care why, you know, maybe I do a little, I just want to know how, I just want to know what the solution is moving forward. And so me as a manufacturing scientist and engineer at Department of Energy, I can reach out, you know, I have this whole network of physicists, chemists, biologists, whatever problem I'm working on, I've got an expert that I can walk over to their office and talk to them. And so it's been really interesting as an engineer being in this field, because I get to see this whole other side and this whole other depth of characterization and, you know, things that we can learn about problems. It is the coolest thing. I haven't been able to do this, but some of my colleagues here have been able to do is put, you know, part of a 3D printer or a 3D printed part in the world's most powerful neutron beam line. Okay. So that's here at Oak Ridge. Most people don't know that. I think it's really amazing that here in East Tennessee, of all places, there's this world-class facility where you can figure out things that you could never figure out anywhere else about materials and everything else. And so that's been really great being in research as an engineer. And then the outreach has been just super helpful because, you know, I've gotten this kind of public persona and the other scientists now know me at Oak Ridge. And so when somebody has a problem, maybe they think of, you know, I've had this happen where they just cold call me. I've never met this person. They're like, hey, I saw the article about you. Oh, cool. Yeah. We should do a project together. I'm like, yes, let's definitely do a project together. And so that's been really beneficial to me, but really outreach, I think, and having that mindset of outreach and having that mindset of mentoring and helping others basically is just part of this whole ecosystem, right? It keeps it all going. We cannot work in a vacuum, cannot work in silos. We have to help each other. We have to understand all the resources out there so that we can do the best job that we can possibly do. And, you know, none of us got here by ourselves. So we need to give back, right? But also selfishly, it is beneficial because you're growing your network. And that's how the magic really happens. When you have a really broad, diverse network of people you can go to solve all the different types of problems out there.
We're coming to the end of our talk here, and I just want to close with a fun little speed round of fun facts about you for the audience. So I'll ask the questions and just give me your quick answer. Could you tell me something about you that maybe most people wouldn't guess?
I have a twin sister, and she's got a master's in biology, so we're both sisters in STEM. She's my best friend. And yeah, I think that's just a fun fact that most people wouldn't have guessed.
What's something cool that you do in your free time?
I have to plug my YouTube series right now. I'm posing as a kid's YouTube channel. So it's called Amelia Gearhart as the character name. So I'm in a wig, glasses, and I have this symbol on my shirt. It's a gear with the heart in the middle. And Amelia, she loves to learn how things work, and she loves learning about STEM and trades. And so I've got about 5 or 6 episodes published. I'm hoping to ramp that back up this year and get some more content out. But that's my hobby right now. Hopefully, a professional gig at some point.
Amelia Gearhart sounds very cool. So check that out on YouTube for your kids, everyone. Next question. What's a guilty pleasure that you have?
My guilty pleasure is spending time on that when I should be probably doing other things. But another guilty pleasure is just basically buying toys for my kids that are actually for me.
All right, next question. Are there any fun nicknames that you've earned yourself over the years?
I like the nickname MacGyver a lot because I can fix it. It might not be pretty, but it's going to work, you know, like that's my favorite. And then like people call me doctor outside of work. And I'm like, that's so funny because we don't call each other that at work because everyone's a doctor. That would be weird.
Okay. Final question here, Amy, tell us a pet peeve that you have.
Oh man, let's see. I just don't like being told no. I'd rather someone kind of lie to me, right? And be like, let me think about it. Let me go see. Instead of just giving me a hard no. Like, I know that's probably backwards. Like most people want to hear it straight, but I just don't like, you know, if I'm asking you for something or wanting you to consider something, just, I don't know. It doesn't happen often, but that does send me into a spiral. So.
Amy, it's been incredible speaking with you. Thank you so much for being here today and congrats on everything you've achieved so far. The future seems very bright and exciting for you. We hope that you can continue taking it to the top.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And to all of our listeners, thank you as well. That chat with Amy Elliott was a sneak preview of an upcoming feature about early career engineers who we believe are the ones to watch. So keep an eye out for that in our June-July 2024 issue of Mechanical Engineering Magazine. And for more conversations on a wide range of engineering topics, be sure to subscribe to ASME TechCast wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm Sarah Albaraca, and I thank you very much for listening.